kwangu na uhuru na utukufu hata milele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe.
Yayo, Africa. Wasa, 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 wasa lele.
Wasa lele.
Yayo, Africa.
Wasa lele.
Wasa, wasa, wasa.
Jambo, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of Radio Harambe, brought to you by JamboEveryone.com. I am Dave McBride, broadcasting from the Radio Harambe studios at an altitude of 1,998 feet above the savannah, and joining me from somewhere in the world, a man who is in fact not the same one you may find driving your next safari truck on Kilimanjaro Safaris, it's Safari Mike.
Jumbo Dave, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Now, Mike, before I go into the explanation as to what I meant by that, where are you calling us from?
I'm in Alligator River National Wildlife Refuge.
Florida? You know,
what?
Florida?
No, close though. It's on the eastern coast of North Carolina. It's one of the few places where we actually find red wolves. They are one of the most endangered animals on Earth.
Yes, I know they are. You
know, only about 150. In zoos and less than that in the wild. All of the ones in the wild were captured in the late 70s and brought into places such as Port Defiance Zoo and an aquarium in Tacoma, Washington, as well as some other places now, where they were bred in captivity and actually began reintroducing them first here in North Carolina.
That's one of those great like success stories. Right. If you know these kind of things, like, you know, I would kind of compare it to the bald eagle that you always hear about in at Flights of Wonder. This was one that's sort of less popular, less in the popular culture than that. But they're one of those species of animals that you always see on the sort of, you know, what we can do if we continue this effort.
But there are still problems. I mean, yeah. There's interbreeding with coyotes that, you know, were not native to North Carolina, but they have come across the Mississippi River over the last few decades thanks to the loss of other apex predators. And, you know, they still are occasionally shot by people who, are frightened or worried about their sheep or whatever it is. So, you know, not all good news, but they're working. It's better than it was 20 years ago.
And just to explain my little intro for you there, I was on the Kilimanjaro Safaris not too long ago, and the guy who was driving it claimed to be Safari Mike.
Well, I will serve him with lawsuit papers shortly.
And the funny thing about it, Mike, is I said to him, are you the Safari Mike? And he shot me this funny look like I'm the only person. I'm sure he listens.
Oh, sure.
Like, I'm the only person who knew that's ever sat in his truck. He shot me a funny look. I don't know. I don't know what that was all about. Listen, on today's show, we are going to discuss news from the Animal Kingdom as well as Walt Disney World. And then in our feature segment, we are going to do a review of the Backstage Safari Tour. So stay tuned for that. So let's start with the local news. The first thing is that, contrary to popular belief, it is not always sunny in 75 in Orlando, although it certainly is more often than it is here in the frozen tundra of the Northeast. So with temperatures dropping into the 40s today, Cali River Rapids is closed. Keep this in mind when visiting Walt Disney World. It was closed today. These are the type of closings on water rides. It's fairly commonplace, Mike, and it happens at Cali quite a bit.
Yeah, it happens there. It happens at some of the pools. I know Typhoon Lagoon shuts down when it gets real cold. If you're there during the winter months like January and February and the weather gets to below 50, you got to, you know, be careful of this kind of stuff.
And, you know, come to think of it, something I posted on a blog posting today, I think on our news roundup on JamboEveryone.com. I am really surprised that we don't have like a polar bear club of sorts that hasn't sort of, you know, a group of, you know, intrepid, slightly insane people who, when it gets down near freezing, want to ride the water rides.
Yeah, I know. I don't know who would want to ride Tully River Rapids at 50 degrees. Although right now that would feel balmy. It's about...
Oh. Yeah. You kidding me? If I was in Florida now, when I looked at my... Because I saw this story and I thought to myself, how cold is it? And it was something like 48 or something like that. And that was this morning. And it was 3 outside my door here in the Northeast. So
no, it's cold up there.
48.
North Carolina.
I know. Usually, but you know what? You're venturing a little further north than usual. Usually you're like closer to the equator. Our next story is, this is something WDWMagic.com reported just in the last couple of days, and it is reporting that cast members at the Creature Comforts gift shop, which is located on Discovery Island, will be closing at this time next year. It seems like an awful long time but to be telling them this, but there's no indication as to what will go in the location. The posting from WDWMagic.com kind of opines a bit about how this could be a potential Starbucks location, because we know, Mike, right, that every theme park is going to have one of these, good idea or not. Everyone's going to have one, and we're only waiting really for when this might happen at the Animal Kingdom.
Right. We still don't know when it's going to come to the studios, and we're still waiting on the Animal Kingdom. I mean, the Post said that this is going to be it's going to be converted to a counter service facility. That's what they've been told, apparently. That WW Magic is surmising, as well as some other people, including myself, that this is going to be where Starbucks will go. It does make some sort of sense, although I have heard on places that Starbucks likes to be on the right-hand side, and you know, it's a little bit into the park as opposed to, you know, the ones in Magic Kingdom and Epcot, which are really right up front. You have to go a little bit into the park. Creature Comforts is right before you get to Africa. But it makes sense because, you know, a lot of people are heading over to Harambe to ride Kilimanjaro Safaris first. So, you know, it does make some sort of sense to be there. Although the only other place that serves breakfast is right there, Pete Safari. There's nothing on the right-hand side.
Right.
You know, heading towards Everest for those people who rope drop that.
Why can't they put it outside the gate?
Like
next to the Rainforest Cafe.
That would make sense. I initially heard rumors that they might actually put it up in the Oasis, basically taking over where the strollers were, built like a Starbucks there. I'm glad they didn't do that. If we're getting Starbucks, this place to me is fine. I mean, this doesn't bother me one bit. Creature Comforts long ago stopped being anything of really any interest to me. I hardly ever went in there anyway.
Well, yeah, true. And regardless of whether or not you like this idea or Starbucks coming in, of which I have already expressed my opinions on this over and over again, I absolutely hate the idea. It's going to happen. I mean, we know that. And I guess this is, if it's got to happen actually inside the park proper, which again is an idea I don't really care for. This is probably the least offensive place, I guess.
Yeah, it really doesn't bother me at all. I mean, what difference does it make? I mean, it's just the Starbucks going there. Who cares? It doesn't bother me one bit. I mean, I'm not a Starbucks connoisseur. I will not waste my time getting in line for a venti whatever.
Right.
You know, take 20 minutes. But I mean, there are plenty of people who like Starbucks. So I don't care. They can put it there. I really just don't care.
Oh, it's certainly not important in my life. And like I said, we've talked about this before. I think that the putting it in the Main Street Bakery was horrible idea, and I maintain that to this day, and I contend that this is not the kind of thing Disney needs to do. I think Disney needs to instead find a resort wide coffee company that can actually produce good coffee. I think that's really the answer. I think if you want to build a coffee shop, I would prefer them to build one that is a themed, unique to Disney coffee shop and not just something that looks like a Starbucks stuck inside of a theme park. I've said this all before. I don't want to go through it again. We don't know whether or not this is going to be the location. Mike mentioned that they are told that it's going to turn into a counter service. As far as we know, the cast members have not been told that. That's sort of on the rumor information.
Right, that's true.
The thing I'm concerned about, Mike, and maybe you can speak to this, is the timing. Would it really take a year?
Well, from what I understand, no, it wouldn't take a year. What are you asking would take a year?
Would it take more than a year to get from now to the opening of it? I mean, would they not really begin construction on the Starbucks for a whole year? Because I thought the contract was sooner than that. You know what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. From everything you hear, it's not closing for another year. That's not going to go down until January. It'll only take them a few months. It'll be closed until, I think, what did they say, May? I forget exactly what it said. But it'll be down for a few months. So I guess it won't be for like another, 15 months before there's a Starbucks in Animal Kingdom. Yeah.
It just seems like a long time frame because Starbucks is probably putting some of the bill here, and usually that speeds up the construction process when somebody else is paying the checks or paying the bills. So I think this is what it's going to be. I agree with the general feeling here is I wouldn't be shocked if it wasn't. That's all I'm saying.
I am kind of surprised that they wouldn't be closing it, say, in late summer for an opening by Christmas time.
Right.
They probably don't want to take it down while, all of Harambe. I mean, Harambe's not opening up in full until, May or whatever it's going to, or August or whatever it's going to, or I guess what, June is what the target is for Harambe? Whatever it is.
Right.
But they probably wouldn't do it until then because it's right near there. I mean, you don't want that whole half of the park under construction.
Right.
But I am surprised they're not doing, taking September, October, or November to do it.
Well, speaking of WDWMagic.com and that area, Harambe opening, let's shoehorn nicely into this next story because that same website posted a short kind of YouTube video. Really all it was a before and after photograph of the construction area from what I assume is a Google Earth shot. I'm not really 100% sure on that. I've looked at Google Earth of this area in the past before, and it does look like they must have updated this recently. Mike, you've seen the picture. I would tell people to go to WDWMagic.com and take a look at it for themselves so they can get kind of an idea of what we're talking about. The sheer size of the new area is really what stands out. I mean, if you zoom in and you look at the walking area of Harambe now, when this opens, that's going to double, if not more.
Yeah, it's about double. I'm looking at it right now. It's about double. I mean, what it looks like is that when you enter it from near the area of the Dawa Bar, there's like a clear walkway that goes over to Festival of the Lion King. And it almost looks like there's almost like a courtyard in front of the Festival of the Lion King. There's like a more of an open area, right, at least as of right now. And then it looks like what they've done is they've stretched out, if many of you remember, the fortifications that were along the river, and it looks like they're still intact from what I can see
it
here.
It does look that way to me, yep.
That little area with the cannon looks all like it's still there. It looks like they've just stretched that out all the way along the river, for a while there until there's an additional building at the end of that.
And that building, I think, is the thing we're all kind of waiting to hear what that is. Because it is a significant sized building. If you look at the building and compare it to the buildings that you know of, like Mombasa Marketplace, the Tusker House, because you can see which ones those are. Although it is hard to tell some of it because you are talking about construction area with some of where Tusker House is. But that building is a significant size.
It's a fairly big size, but it's nowhere near as big as Tusker House.
It's not as big as Tusker House, but it's at least as big as Mombasa and Zwani Traders, that building combined, if not even a little bit bigger. What do you say?
I would say that is not correct.
You think it's smaller?
I do. I do think it's smaller. Look, it's hard to tell where.
It is hard to tell.
Because behind that area is all cast member lockers and stuff. I'm not sure how much that building is Zawadi traders and how much of it is cast member lockers and things like that, which is a which I'll get to as an interesting rumor that I've heard in a second. But it is bigger than just, I mean, it's right on the river. It would seem puzzling to me that they would build a gift shop with a water view.
That's what I was just going to say.
Why do that? And the other weird thing about it is that if you look at the before shot, that waterway, the river, Discovery River, it loops all around Discovery Island.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like they've actually built, and they might be building another walkway here. There's two different like paths that cut across the water, and the water is not continuous as of right now. And that's obviously due to construction to get stuff in and out, I would assume. I don't really know. But I think my understanding was they're building at least one other bridge to get over into that side of Harambe to cut down on traffic. But it looks like there's almost two.
Well, where would that bridge be leading to?
It's hard. Well, into the Harambe near Festival of the Lion King. I mean, part of what I heard was they were going to build a path off the main path that would take you, instead of going into Harambe by Kilimanjaro Safaris, you know, that path would take you over the river on a different bridge that would lead you into the basically the courtyard of Festival of the Lion King. But it's hard to judge that here unless they're building it over by this other additional building. I mean, again, we don't really know too much. It's hard to tell right now.
Does it look to you as if there's going to be an entrance that might be coming in from a different area altogether, such as like if it were perhaps coming from Avatar straight
that's
over?
That's a possibility. That is a very that is a distinct possibility. But if that's the case, there is a road there that they use for the parade. That's for people who look at this while we're talking, you will see what looks like a, you know, basically a road, a street that's at the very bottom of the picture that leads into between Pete Safari and the current Creature Comforts. That is where the parade comes from off-site into the area.
Comes from the offstage ring road, because there's a road that leads all around the outside. You can see the parking lot. That's all cast member parking there behind you.
Right.
That's where they stage the parade, or they do the backstage stuff. They come up that road there and then enter where Mike sees that sort of asphalt ends, and you have the themed stuff right outside of that is Creature Comforts, yeah.
Right. So if they're going to build something from Avatar into this Festival of the Lion King area, they would have to get rid of that, I would assume. I mean, you don't want fucking. I mean, you hear rumors that the parade is going to go bye bye at some point anyway, so maybe that's true. But it's very hard to tell. There's also, interestingly enough, oh, go ahead.
What you're talking about, right, is so if Mike, just so if you're looking at this, and I hate to do this because this really makes poor radio, but if you look at this photograph that they're showing on this WDW Magic posting, and you look right at the video and you go to the very end of it, you'll see that at the beginning of the video, all of that road that we're describing, and it's the bottom, you'll see on the bottom left-hand corner, you'll see a parking lot. Then you'll see a road with yellow lines on it. That's the road that the cast members take in and around the park that leads to the sort of a ring road that goes around the park, like I mentioned. And then just along the right, if you keep going there, just to your right, you'll see another road. That's the road we're talking about. At the beginning of the video, you see a lot of lush green there. And by the time you get to the end of it, by the time they fully swipe them into what we're seeing now, a lot of that green has been taken away. And you can see we now have a crossing, which appears to be dirt at this point, though. If you look at the themed paths in Animal Kingdom, they all look like dirt. Right. So it does match the same color as the path of the Animal Kingdom, or the normal walking paths of Animal Kingdom. So that may very well be another entrance of some kind that comes in from who knows where. And then the other one Mike's talking about is if you go up the river a little bit before you get to the main bridge where you see people walking on now, there's another one there. There's another kind of bridge of some kind there. So I would imagine this is the only thing that I could think of, and the point I'm trying to make is the only thing I could think of is that getting from Festival of the Lion King to Avatar and vice versa perhaps needs a second way, right? So if you want to go from Main Street, if you want to go from the hub in Main Street or, you know, by the castle and you want to get to Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, you have more than one way to get there. And that's very important for crowd control.
Right.
And that's that may be what they're doing here. Now, we have to remember Disney's Animal Kingdom does have small pathways. It's built that way. It's intimate. It's not big thoroughfares like they have in World Showcase where you can put almost anything on there. They have the smaller path. So, yeah, Mike, I think you're right about that. I think they need to do this. I'm really puzzled by the one that's just to the left of the main bridge that's there now. I don't know why they would need that there. I don't know what that is. I really
right.
don't.
I don't know either. Presumably, if they're building bridges there, because, I mean, obviously it's not bridges yet. It's the, they've obviously just filled in the water. For
sure.
Currently. But if they're going to build bridges there, it's hard. I don't know. See, the whole River Cruise, not River Cruise, I should say, but the Rivers of Light thing is going to have to go around, I would assume, or the river. I mean, I thought that was the point of it. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it really is. And that building, man. Jeez.
Well, that's the other thing.
I want to know what that is.
Which, oh, that one? Yeah. There's also another one. If you look, you see the main building itself. Obviously,
yeah, the main theater building.
You can see the backstage is huge.
Right.
And almost like the square building in the center. I'm assuming that's the theater. It looks like it'll be set up pretty much the same way.
Sure.
You can sort of tell where the bleachers are going to go. Well, whatever they got to decide to put.
Right.
But right next to it is almost like a small little building. All by, like, just off to that. There's, like, a little pathway in, around it or whatever.
Right.
I don't know if that's, like, another little, maybe, like, a little counter service, maybe a little gift shop. But that looks like a separate building there.
There also appears to be what one would imagine some sort of lobby entrance on this, as opposed to the right. other one where you really just walked in into the main stage. This seems to be building some sort of good size lobby on this, like, because you could see the little square that juts out for the main theater building.
Sure. Well, in the old festival, in the old festival of the Lion King, you had the main, you had the theater, and you stood outside on line, so there would be long lines waiting to get in beforehand. The way this is set up, they really can't do that. There's no place for those people to go. So I'm assuming that's some sort of
maybe a queue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Of some type. Correct.
Yeah, I would guess there's going to be a Lion King gift shop. Right off to the left there, and then whatever this is down at the bottom, right by these paths and bridges Mike and I were talking about, that is the $1 million question. We still need to know what that is.
And another hot rumor, Dave, and I don't even think I've told you this one yet, but I've heard this hot rumor. I'm not sure how reliable it is, but they are saying that they may be taking out the cast member areas over by the lockers, which is, if you're looking at this picture, now go back to the main section of Harambe, and as you walk towards, past Tusker House on the left and Traders on the right, it swings around, you kind of go off to where Pangani is.
Right.
You'll see, like, basically like a little roadway there and some behind-the-scene buildings there. That's for cast members and stuff like that. The rumor is that is going to be converted into some sort of eatery. That may actually go all the way out onto the path leading towards Asia.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
But who knows? We'll see. Yeah. There's space there, that's for sure. There's plenty of space. Yeah.
So we'll keep you posted. Anything else on this before we move on?
I don't think so.
Okay, this is, again, it drives us crazy not to have this information. Now, due to our recording schedule, we were not able to mention last time we were on an article that came out in the Orlando
Sentinel.
It's the Orlando Sentinel. Yep. I got to go back to it. I'm sorry. This again, making for great, great radio here. Cause I just, an article came out in the Orlando Sentinel by Jason Garcia, who is sort of the local theme park, writer. One of a couple of them. He's been doing this for a long time. Very respected guy. He wrote an article kind of, what I would call a column, really, more than anything else. There's not many new information here. There's some little nuggets here and there, but nothing groundbreaking. And it's entitled "Disney Hopes Big Animal Kingdom Expansion Keeps Visitors in Park Longer." Duh, we all knew that. This goes back to January 11th. If you want to read it, It's actually a really well-written article, and there's some neat things in it. He starts off talking about how on the busiest day of the year, on New Year, one of the busiest days of the year, on New Year's Eve, when all the other theme parks are open till the wee hours of the morning, Animal Kingdom shuts down at 8 p.m., and then he goes to talk about how we need to get rid of the half-day park thing and all that stuff, and lo and behold, here comes Avatar. Now, Mike, you brought this to my attention.
Right.
And what about this kind of struck you?
The two things that struck me the most about this article was how they are estimating that the renovation is going to be about $800 million. So they're plugging in about $800 million to Disney's Animal Kingdom. Now, other places you will get information that the Avatar Land area will cost about $500 million.
Right.
Which sounds about right. About right. So where I'm fascinated by the other $300 million. It can't be just Rivers of Light and the Nighttime Safari. I mean we already have the safari there, so they don't have to build a new attraction. They're just gonna that can't be that much money. And the Rivers of Light, I'm sure, is not cheap, but it's not, you know, $250 million. So I'm curious as to what else may be coming. It's just sort of a little nugget as to maybe there's more here than meets the eye, so to speak.
I would agree.
And the other thing that struck me is that he references Avatar Land as the final piece of the expansion, which says to me the other stuff, Nighttime at Kilimanjaro Safaris, Rivers of Light, you can expect before Avatar Land opens up, which, you know, it's not, again, not earth-shaking by any means, but it was interesting, I thought.
Yeah, that was the kind of nugget of information that stood out for me. The thing that I liked about it, one of the things that he talks about is how people are likening it to the expansion of Disney's California Adventure and how, in fact, the Animal Kingdom is not viewed by executives anywhere near in the light that the California Adventure was before the expansion. He talks about how, you know, Animal Kingdom does very well with numbers and attendance, and there's not really an issue with that. It's just that they want to kind of open it up so that people stay longer, and therefore we take some of the strain off the other parks that tend to fill up, especially in busy times.
Yeah.
You know, late at night. So you want to have something else that kind of spreads the crowds out a little bit. And I think certainly in light of the Downtown Disney stuff that's being done now and the mess that's going to be for the foreseeable future, that would seem to indicate to me that they probably will want to try to get some of these nighttime things in quickly.
Right.
You know?
At least I would think maybe this is wishful thinking, but maybe at least by next Christmas.
Yeah.
The summer of 2015.
And I would agree with that. And I do think that that's the driver here. I don't think they feel that there's an issue with park attendance or anything like that. I think it gets the attendance that they want. I think the driver here really is, we need to move people around a little bit better, because as attendances expand, they need to be able to, better move people around. There was an interesting thing in there about the My Magic Plus.
Yeah.
Where he talks about how most people only obtain two fast passes a day. So therefore, they put $1 billion into this. And that's all part of this sort of way of moving people around, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's clearly what the My Magic Plus is. Not only moving people around, but figuring out ahead of time where they're going to be to better maximize their resources in terms of staffing and things of that, you know, that ilk. The other interesting thing I saw on this was that the Fantasyland expansion, which is a significant expansion, which, you know, has a major ride in Snow White and another major dark ride in Little Mermaid.
Right.
A major restaurant. A complete retheme of Storybook Circus, the whole Be Our Guest area. I mean, it's a big, big deal.
Right.
Costs $425 million, less than what they're thinking Avatar Land's going to cost, which I found fascinating.
Yeah, I did too. Until you start to think about it, there's something in there where he talks about how Disney really chose Avatar almost because of its ability, you know, what it offers to a nighttime experience because of the bioluminescent things and stuff like that they can do. My guess is that the research and development on that's going to be pretty pricey.
Right.
And that just the sort of scenery alone is going to be a lot more than it's going to be in other places. I also think that you're correct, and that I think the article mentioned this too, that that this expansion is more along the lines of the new Fantasyland than it is the California Adventure.
Yeah, well, one thing they made a point of saying, or at least Disney has, and this article quotes them, is that they were not, as you said before, not disappointed necessarily with how Animal Kingdom was performing. They just, as you said, needed to, you know, keep the people there past 4 or 5 o'clock and keep them there until 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, even during the busiest seasons, while California Adventure was just a bomb, and they just desperately needed to redo it. That's not what we're talking about here.
Right, and then finally, the one thing that stuck out to me was this quote somebody at UCF.
Yeah.
At the end, and the quote really proves that just about anybody could be a professor of hospitality management at UCF. I'm sorry to say it. I shouldn't say it like that. But the quote is, I'm just not talking about Avatar. She says, is it a he or a she? It's a he. Says, I'm just not sure it fits Animal Kingdom. Are you going to Animal Kingdom to see everything or just to blow in to do Avatar and then go someplace else? You really need to create a reason for them to stay in the park as a whole. So what he's saying here is that Avatar is a problem because everybody just wants to go see Avatar. I don't think this man is really dialed into the...
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah.
This is a silly thing to say and a silly thing to add into the story. And the only reason why I bring it up is because, you know, sometimes it's good to get the opinions of sort of researchers that are involved in the business outside of the Disney fan community. And let's face it, I mean, we're just fans here doing things like this. But it shows to me that nobody really knows. And that's the strange thing about the Avatar project, Mike. And I think that's the thing that makes it so debatable and why people talk about it so much. It's nobody knows what's going to happen.
Right.
No one knows. This is the first time they've done a project where you can honestly say this could totally die on the vine or this could be gigantic. I mean, when have you ever said that before about a Disney project? I mean, even the biggest of attractions, you always said to yourself, well, it's going to be, you know, we know what it is. We know what it's going to appeal to. It's going to appeal to, you know, fans of this film or people who like roller coasters or, you know, that kind of thing. We always knew that there was something. This project, we don't have any idea how this is going to go over. It's really fascinating. And that quote kind of proved that to me. That's all.
Yeah, the only thing that kind of closely compares is the complete redo of California Adventure. But again, there was no negative really to the redo of California Adventure. They had to do it.
There was no risk on the idea itself, which there is here.
Right. I mean, there were people who were saying, well, it's never going to work. You know, people are always going to want to go to Disneyland. There's a lot of people who only go there for one day and they're always going to pick Disneyland. So, you know, you're wasting $1 billion and, right, but they had to do it, or else just level it and make it a parking lot. Because there was exactly two choices. So this is a little bit different.
Exactly. All right. So let's move on to the next one. This is a article from actually this is a story from the South African Department of Environmental Affairs, which just came over my wire today. Here is the release: the total number of rhinos poached in South Africa during 2013 increased to 1,004 animals. The number of people arrested also increased to 343. Just to give you some context, during 2012, 668 were killed, 448 in 2011, and 333 in 2010. And that number again for 2013 was 1,004 animals killed. It's national parks are no refuge for these things. In fact, the Kruger National Park, according to them, bears the brunt of it, losing 606 rhinos to poachers in that park alone. I always like to bring these things up, especially in light of the fact that, you know, there are organizations on the ground working to help and try to do the best to stop these things. This is a very dangerous situation. The South African government is committing itself to doing what they can, and that includes, let's face it, military help, because you need to go in with, you have to go after bad guys sometimes. And I just wanted to mention it to you, Mike. 1,004 animals killed, 37 so far in 2014 alone, and that was in 11 days.
Yeah, it's getting worse and worse every year. Poaching is becoming a bigger problem for rhinos, anyway, in Africa. South Africa, you know, has some strict rules, but they are not as militaristic as some of the other countries in terms of stopping poachers. I mean, some of the other ones shoot to kill.
Right.
South Africa doesn't do it, I know, but be that as it may. So it is becoming a bigger and bigger issue as the price put on rhino horns and things of that nature gets higher and higher. I mean, people who are destitute in these countries know that if they get one rhino or a couple of rhinos, you know, they can feed their children for a long, long time. And it's a real, real problem.
And with that in mind, Mike, I wanted to just give a thanks to all of our listeners and readers. You know who you are, who helped us through purchases in our Zazzle store, Zazzle.com/Jombo, everyone. And our Radio Harambe t-shirts, of which we still have two extra larges left if you're interested. Over the last couple of weeks, we've actually been able to make small donations to each of our conservation partners. The amounts aren't huge, but honestly, I really believe that every little bit helps, and I can't thank all of you enough who contributed to these donations. When we began this project in about 18 months ago or so, my first goal and foremost goal was to be able to do this. And thanks to you guys, we've achieved it. We have a lot of plans in 2014 to raise even more funds, save wildlife, and we ask for your continued support and all that. But just big thanks to everybody who has helped us in that regard. That is all for the local news. We're going to take a short break. Come back with world news on Radio Harambe in just a second. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jombo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to jomboeveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife? Back on Radio Harambe, it is time for the world news, and joining us from Alligator Park in North Carolina.
Alligator River National Wildlife.
Alligator River. Come on. Now, that was closer than I usually get.
Well,
it's only because I could pronounce alligator. Usually it's in
English.
It's a name I can't possibly pronounce. Here's Safari Mike with the world news. What we got, Mike?
All right, just a couple of quick stories this evening. First of all, we'll talk briefly. We've touched on this recently in the past, and that's the Disney's Festival of Fantasy Parade that is coming to the Magic Kingdom in March. Only a, you know, weeks away, really. Disney Parks blog recently put some more information, some more pictures of some of the floats that are coming, including the one for Brave, for Tangled, and for Peter Pan, and they all look... I have to tell you, I'm kind of excited about this parade. I'm not a parade guy, but I know we talked about this last time, but the look of these floats is very different from anything we've seen before, so I'm looking forward to it. It should be pretty good.
Yeah, this is the one we talked about with the Maleficent float, correct?
Right.
Yeah, I did see some of this new information, and it does... I am intrigued by it. I will agree, for the first time, I am intrigued by a parade.
Yeah, it's a rare event.
It is a rare event, and I am intrigued by it. Cool.
Next one?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. On the Disney Parks, well, online store, beginning on January 27th. And running until February 2nd, Disney's doing again this little thing where you only have about a week to buy this, you know, these various merchandise. And this is actually the Disney and Walt Disney World, Disneyland and Walt Disney World railroad T-shirts. Design is from a poster. And I'm sure many of you are familiar with the attraction poster that you could find throughout the park. Yeah. You buy that on a T-shirt as well as some other items like candles and a plate and all that kind of stuff, notebooks and things like that. But you can only buy it for a week, and it's a cool design. It's, you know, very, you know, for Disneyland and Magic Kingdom fanatics, this is a prime attraction poster, and you might want to get it on a T-shirt.
Yeah, there's just two things I wanted to mention about it. One, they are the design itself is very familiar to me.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly the stuff you see that they're kind of previewing for later, which is there's a plate and a cup and something else in there. I'm not, you know, a poster, attraction posters calendar, which that sounds pretty cool too.
I
love these. This is the attraction poster of the railroad. The design is great. It's just that I just thought that they sold something like this before.
I don't think so.
In the parks. I don't know why if anybody knows if I'm right or wrong about this, let me know. I know for sure they've sold things like signs or coasters or something like that does put that in there. They have always used those. Here's my point. I love this. When they do these short run things, I kind of wish they would do something a little more obscure. You know what I mean? I kind of wish they would do something like Mr. Toad. Horizons, like they did Horizons.
Right. I was just going to say Horizons.
Even if they do the Disneyland Railroad or the railroad thing, we're all familiar with the attraction poster design. How about a different design? You know?
Well, that would cost the money to have somebody design it.
Now you're just being snarky again.
This is, they just, you know, went to the poster art of Disney Parks and made a couple of photocopies and sent it off to the the T-shirt place. Is that too snarky?
Yes, it is. Not for me, but I'm sure for others it may be. It may be. But I do like this. I like this trend so far. I think that it's cool. I just, like I said, the only thing I was hoping is that we kind of would have something more along the lines of the Horizons thing for these short runs. Something obscure. I don't know. Something a little out of the ordinary. Something that you'd have to be a real big Disney fan to love,
right?
Or to know, like Seabase Alpha T-shirts.
Well, the Horizons,
which we talked about. The Horizons one was great. The
Dreamfinder one, which was
terrific. Yeah,
reminiscent of that. We'll be getting more, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. But I do like it, and I may even consider purchasing it. Because I'm a big railroad nut. I love that train.
Yeah, it's cool.
I do like it. Okay. We don't have much here, right? There's only maybe one more.
There is one more.
All right.
A new quick service place has opened in downtown Disney. The House of Blues Smokehouse is now open. And here the menu consists of things like pulled chicken sandwich, pulled pork sandwich, beef brisket sandwich, ribs, you know, stuff you would typically find in a barbecue joint. And it's a quick service. The prices are not as steep as they were over at the food trucks. And if you're a vegetarian, you get coleslaw, and that's about it. But having said that, it is a new place at downtown Disney. It seems relatively interesting. Maybe I would try something here. And I am, I am no vegetarian myself.
No, you're not.
I like a good beef brisket sandwich. But I did see some vegetarians who shall remain nameless.
Who are really excited about this.
who basically have the option of coleslaw.
Right.
Which seems relatively ridiculous. So why can't they do, and this is even true at the Flame Tree Barbecue, why can't they do something a little bit more? I mean, vegetarians are not, you know, out of luck at a barbecue place. Smoked macaroni and cheese, anybody? I mean, it just seems like an obvious choice to me. I don't know why they don't do it, you know, for vegetarians. It just doesn't make any sense to me. if you're in a group of five people, let's say, and one of them is a vegetarian, what are they doing? I mean, they should have at least
that's the issue, a
decent option for people who, listen, if you're in a group of six vegetarians, just say, you know what, I'm not going to the smokehouse. Let's go over to Wolfgang Puck's that has, right, you know, pizzas and all that kind of stuff. Fine. Right. That's fine. But if you're in a group, let's say somebody in my family was a vegetarian. I am not, my kids are not or whatever. They're going to look at it and say, now I have to go someplace else.
Right.
I think they should at least have a halfway decent option for a vegetarian at
absolutely
every place.
We're not, like Mike said, it's not a lot to ask for. There are some inventive things you can certainly do here. So there's, asparagus, sure, things and stuff, it doesn't have to be much. Just has to be something. There's something good.
Cheese.
Mac and cheese, yep.
It fits right into the theme. It's so stupid.
All sorts of cornbread stuff you could do. There's, yeah.
Of course.
Yep.
Of course. Easy.
Yeah.
Easy as pie.
I understand. But I'm going to try it anyway because it does look pretty good. And I am a House of Blues fan.
I am too. Let me throw another story at you real
quick.
Sure,
why not?
Well, apparently, and this happened only a few hours ago, the full lineup of the 2014 Flower Power concert series.
Oh, I love these.
For the Flower and Garden Festival has been announced.
I love these because they include a list of...
You want me to read the list?
I really do, because they're always great. Can I make a couple of guesses?
Sure, go ahead, guess.
Herman's Hermits.
Oh, yes. April 25 to 27. But it's not Herman's Hermits anymore. It's Herman's Hermits starring Peter Noon.
Because everybody else is gone.
Is that what it is? I mean, what is it?
Of course.
Right, go ahead.
What about they always have Mike Jefferson Airplane became...
Starship.
They always have them on there.
It's another good one because it's Starship. All in capital letters. I don't know why it's all in capital letters, but
really?
I guess that's the name of their band. Starring Mickey Thomas. There is nobody from Jefferson Airplane.
Anymore, of course not.
Anywhere near this band.
Of course not.
Mickey Thomas, who was in I guess it was Jefferson Starship for a while, right?
Yes, yes. And they used to always have Davy Jones, but obviously that's not going to happen anymore. But they used to always have him.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, but the rest of them are, and I'll give you a quick rundown of some
of
these.
Go for it.
The Guess Who?
Ah, classic.
I'm surprised they couldn't get The Who, but anyway.
You're surprised by that?
Yeah, shocked. Gary Lewis and the Playboys.
Oh, God.
The Orchestra starring, this is the name of the band now. This is the name of the band.
Orchestra?
Orchestra starring former members of ELO.
So the electric light is gone, and all they have left is the orchestra.
It can't be what's-his-face. Who's the main guy of ELO? What's his name? If he was in the Traveling Wilburys.
Yeah, the guy with the beard and the big red hair.
I'm sure he's not in it.
No, he's not in it. He's a producer. I can't think of it. Jeff Lynne.
That's it. Thank you. The Loving Spoonful.
Ooh.
Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Of course. How did I forget them? They're always there.
The Village People.
Oh, are you kidding? Now, could they be the same ones?
I have no idea.
Oh, God, I hope so.
The Grassroots.
Mike, could you imagine the size of the YMCA dance along that goes on? Disney wants street parties and dance parties. Here you go, man. The Village People.
I don't understand. Disney must be. I mean, how much could this possibly cost? Why don't they just hire the Village People and stick them in the back?
Seriously.
The streets of United of America and Hollywood Studios.
Totally, totally.
They probably would cost the same as the
I'm sure.
Chubby Checker and the Wildcats.
Cool.
And the big closer, the Alan Parsons Live Project.
Not the Alan Parsons Project. The Alan Parsons Live Project.
I don't know. I'm yes, I guess.
Okay. Exciting. Well, that's it for the world news. Sorry we didn't have anything really great for you this time around. We don't control that. We'll be back with our feature segment, a review of the Backstage Safari Tour on Radio Harambe, coming back in just a second.
Hi, Explorer Mickey here. Did you know there are only a few thousand great green macaws left in the wild? There are such beautiful birds, but people are causing them to disappear. But we can help. The ARA project works to save the habitats for lots of different kinds of macaws. They also help rescue birds and even hatch baby chicks to keep the population growing. So we need to help them do all of that good stuff by going to the araproject.org and making a donation. Every little bit counts.
Welcome back once again to Radio Harambe. I am Dave McBride. Joining me is Safari Mike and a listener, Mike, named Connie. She is also a proud new owner of a Radio Harambe t-shirt.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah, she is visiting the Animal Kingdom from the West Coast later this year. And in an email, she asked me about the backstage safari. She was asking if it was worth the price of admission, if she thought it would be something that she would like. And, you know, I thought, in light of the fact that Connie had, before asking me this question, had assisted in our conservation effort, I thought we would give her more than just a few sentences I can manage to type with my thumbs on my iPhone when replying to her email, and we would go a little bit in depth into the backstage safari. So here we go. We have, is this the first tour we've done? It is, correct?
Yes. We'll do some others.
Yes, we do have others to do. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, this is the first one.
All right, so here we go. Now, Mike has not been on this.
Nope.
And I have, and I have only been on it once. Let me start off by saying I'm sure there are slight differences in other people's tours. And I know from reading some other sort of trip reports and things like that, especially leading up to when I decided to do it, that they're similar, but a little different at the same time. You go to some slightly different areas. There are certain areas that they all go to, and I'll try to point that out as we go along. Like all tours, the backstage safari begins at the front gate. Although, does the Wild Africa Trek start there? Is that where you check in?
It does not.
Now you have to go check in Harambe, correct?
Correct.
So all the other tours start at the front gate, right where you check in. You go there. You usually find somebody who's standing around in a safari hat with a clipboard, and they're the person you check in with. They hand you a set of headphones, which allows you – it's just a sort of a short-range radio, so you can listen to your guide speaking to you on the headphones during the crowded areas that you're in. You meet all your fellow people on your tour, and you kind of gather around there and wait for your guide to come and introduce herself or himself, whoever it might be. We only had about maybe a half a dozen people in our group, and that's true for a couple of the other tours I've been on, too. I have not been on Wild Africa Trek. I've only been on everything else, pretty much. And I like the intimacy of that group. And so if you go in the off-season, that is really a good time to go, because if you can get a small group, you can really engage the guide, and you can really engage the other cast members that you meet along the way. And you do meet cast members and other people, especially involved in different animal handling things. That's true for this tour as well as the Wild by Design.
Good question.
Yeah.
Do you know how many tours they do in a day? I mean, did you have a choice of different times in a particular day, or was you just one per day?
There was only one the day I was there. Okay. And I believe they do more than one on busy days, but I've never seen any more than two, because they all kind of begin right at the start of the day.
Okay.
So they don't go through the much into the more crowded hours.
And do they start opening with the park, or do you get in early?
When we were there for this particular tour, it was at 8:30. And okay. The park was opening at 8 o'clock for extra magic hours.
Okay.
But I believe they do it at right when the park opens, or maybe a half an hour before.
Right. Because I know the Wild Africa Trek will start before the park actually opens.
Yeah. I think it depends on how many people they have and when they schedule it. But if there's only one a day, ours opened at 8:30. Okay. So it was a half hour after the actual opening. But if you were not a resort guest, you were in before opening.
Okay.
Essentially. Depending on the time you actually meet your guide, you often kind of begin by sort of meandering up into the oasis a little bit to see a few animals. And the whole time this happens, she's got like a walkie-talkie where she's getting, or even a cell phone she's answering sometimes, where they're telling you whether or not it's clear to go backstage. And you have to kind of wait because you begin the tour actually backstage. So they have to wait until that area is kind of clear of whatever might be there or whoever might be walking around without their costume entirely on. So when we started the tour, we actually walked up towards the anteater, talked a little bit about how they designed the multi-tier of the anteater's exhibit. And then she got the call and that was over with. And we said, okay, let's go into the real tour here. And we walked through the door that's actually by the back entrance to the Rainforest Cafe. And we all piled into an unmarked white passenger van.
Okay.
And she's talking while she's driving. You got your little headphones on. And what you do is you begin by getting in and seeing, really, all of... You get a really... Just from this little drive, you get a really great scope of the exterior ring road that Mike and I were talking about earlier in the show when we were talking about the Festival of the Lion King project being built. There is a two-lane road that extends all throughout the park and throughout the around. I don't know if it goes all the way into Asia. I think it stops by the time it gets to Dinoland. It doesn't extend all the way that way. It just goes up and around kind of like a hook down mm-hmm. towards Asia. And as you're driving on the road, to the right is the park. So all of the animal backstage, animal barns and exhibits and animal care things are there, while to the left, you have all the kind of cast member things, including places to park your bicycle, places to park safari trucks at night. And when we were driving by, the safari trucks were actually entering into the safari. They begin at 8 o'clock. Like I said, the park opened at 8 o'clock. And she was actually Mike, now that we're going through this, I think I have an answer to your question. She was talking about how some days when they do the tour, they're right as the park opens, which means they must begin the tour before the park opens. And she's talking about how sometimes we're stuck here for 15 minutes waiting for all the trucks to go out. But there are still a few hanging out there, so you see them kind of trickling in. You see bird cages for parrots on your right. You see the cast member cafeteria, which, if memory serves, they call Pride Rock.
That's correct. It's absolutely correct.
Okay. You see all that stuff as you drive by. We actually drove by like bird cages that had parrots in them, and you could see, or some sort of macaw, and you could see them in the cages, in the large cages off exhibit there as you drove by. Each barn has the name of the animal. Well, let me say this. Each barn has the name of the animal it was originally intended for on it. Okay? So, in Giraffe 2, there may not be giraffes.
Right.
Okay? So, she did explain that. And our first stop on it was where they keep the night barns, kind of a separate area, fenced in. They keep the night barns for the rhinos. The white rhinos specifically. I did not see black rhinos, and I don't know if there was a black rhino barn there, but there was a white rhino, and the elephants are in the same exhibit or in the same area. She has to have a special key that she opens up this padlock to get in. So even cast members who are not either on the tour or part of that animal handler team can get in without somebody asking, without being let in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay.
So that's fenced in, and obviously there's trucks looking to go in. As you walk in, you could see easily which one the elephant one is, because it's huge.
You do see that from the Rafikis, don't you, at the train?
Yes, you see the tip of the white of the yes, you see that absolutely. You see the rhinos and you see that same part, and as we're in there, you can hear the train going by. But yes, that's exactly the building that you see. That's not the end of it, but it's close towards sort of the back end of the safari.
Mm-hmm.
So as you're passing to it, as you're driving up to it, you see a bunch of things, like all of the oasis animals are there. So you see anything involved in the oasis, they're all marked there. And they have kind of smaller barns because they're smaller animals. and the Discovery Island ones are there as well. And then you start to get into the African ones, the big ones, and that's where it kind of gets really expansive. So just as Kilimanjaro Safaris is sort of the biggest area, that's also the biggest area backstage as well. Right. It is a very impressive building that they built there for the elephants. I'll get to that in a second, because we actually began the tour, sort of the actual first stop on the tour was with the white rhinos. And in the barn was a humongous male rhino called Frankie. And we got to kind of go up and meet him. Mm-hmm. There was a handler there who was feeding him. She brought out this gigantic bucket of something. I forget what it was. Some sort of carrot or something like that. And was feeding him. Through the thing, she was explaining that he was back here because he was fairly new. And as a male, he's kind of, you know, needs to sort of slowly get into the herd, I guess, whatever you would call it. What's a group of rhinos?
You don't even know. What is a group of rhinos?
I don't know. But he has to sort of assimilate in with them, and that he's had some sort of, not issues, but he's had some sort of, you know, like some of the girls like him and some don't, is what she said. Kind of a nice way of putting that. This was sort of, Mike, the first time backstage for me. It was the first time backstage for me at the Animal Kingdom. And to start off with being within an arm's length of a 3,000-pound rhino or whatever it is, sure. I mean, the thing's the size of a truck.
Yeah, it is. It's huge.
You know, and he is a full-grown, you know, not an adolescent. He's a full-grown male, but a young one. He was, you know, brought in for the breeding purposes. I don't know exactly where he came from, but he wasn't. I wrote that down somewhere, but he was not. He wasn't born there. So she's feeding and talking about him, and she's going, Mike, she's going on and on for 10, 15 minutes about rhinos and stuff, and you just can't take your eyes off this thing.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where you don't even remember what she was saying.
How close were you to the rhino?
If I put my hand out in front of me, I could have grabbed him. I could have touched his horn. We were that close. Now, there was big iron bars between us and him.
Sure.
But we were right on top of him. And she told everybody, you know, don't touch him. We don't, you know, he's very docile. We can touch him all we want. We don't think there'd be a problem if he did. Just don't, because we don't know.
Right.
You know, he just has a little kind of outdoor area and then an indoor barn. Mm-hmm. And it's all kind of a concrete thing. And she actually said, and you could speak to this more than I could, that even though this looks less like the wild than the exhibit, they are more docile and more sort of comfortable in this environment than they are on exhibit.
Right. Well, I mean, oftentimes animals such as that, animals like to go off exhibit. I mean, that's, they often are easier to get inside because that's where they're fed. That's where they sleep. They grow comfortable there more than they're out there in the exhibit with other animals around and these trucks driving by.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of action on Savannah, on view. You know, not that it's, you know, terrible by any means to be on exhibit, but yeah, they're a little bit, it's a little quieter and it's a little bit more comfortable off exhibit for sure.
Yeah, he was real calm and fantastic, and it was a real kind of, you know, that set the mood. Now, when you sign up for the backstage safari, they tell you there is absolutely no guarantee you're going to see an animal while backstage.
Right.
In fact, they say you're probably not. Though I read a lot of reports where people do. More often than not.
I would imagine, and I know they have quite a few white rhinos at the Disney's Animal Kingdom.
Yes.
And there's more than they can really put on exhibit. And yep. I have to say, every time I have been on Rafiki's, you know, the train, the Wildlife Express, I more than most times we go past the white rhino barn, you will see a rhino in there. So I think if you're going to see an animal, this is probably the most likely.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of others. I've heard that there have been elephants in the elephant room, in the elephant building when you're there, that they've gone into different buildings, except for, you know, especially if they're, you know, if something's going on with the rhinos or the elephants, if something needs to be done there, then they divert you to other things. There are other places where you can see animals and where other barns you can go into. This seems to be the one they most popularly go to.
Right.
But there are other ones. that I hear quite a bit about. So if you are interested in reading these trip reports, just kind of Google this and you'll read all that stuff. The next thing we did was walk straight over to the elephants, and the elephant barn. Mm-hmm. Actually walk up to the second floor and look down upon it. And when we were in there, they were cleaning it. They were hosing it down.
Okay.
And they have sort of, they separate them all at night. So each one has kind of a stall, like you would imagine horses would. But each stall has sort of, like they can put their trunk in between stalls if they wanted to and touch each other. Certainly they can see each other. It's not like a wall between them. There's kind of a couple of iron bars that separates them and a door that opens up to allow them into different areas. And then there are there's like an outside walking feeding area with a big giant pile of hay there that they go to as well. So they kind of come in, eat a little bit, then they go into their barns and they sleep there at night. And then I guess if they're in there for a long period of time, they can go out into this open area and then come back in. Upstairs also is like a skull of an elephant that they found in Africa, I guess. Some tusks, lots of information. And you go up there and she shows you where everything is. And it's a huge area because you think they have quite a few elephants there. So that's a space that really needs to be big.
Right. Sure. Yeah, they do have quite a few elephants, and they're African elephants, which are much harder to keep than Asian elephants. Most zoos that have elephants have Asian elephants because they're much easier to keep. They're much less aggressive, especially the males are very aggressive for African elephants. In fact, I don't know if they tell you this on the trip, during this, they probably don't, but elephants kill more keepers than any other animal, and it's not even close.
Yeah, no, they did mention that. They failed to point that out. But it was okay because there was no elephants there, so nobody was worried. But you could tell that there is there's a lot of safety procedures in this and in the rhinos. The separation is there. I mean, it may be hard to see. You may be impressed by how close you can come to them, but there is definite separation between you and them. And there is a whole system of where they can put them into a sort of harness if they need to tranquilize them and lie them down. There is sort of I describe it as sort of a bolt lift, sort of a glorified bolt lift, some sort of like lift harness type thing that they use, that they put them in. And sort of a small caged area that they can bring them into and close the doors around so they can do sort of close contact examination without actually being in the barn with them. Does that make sense?
It does. It does.
So there's all that kind of stuff there. It's fascinating. Talks a long time about the elephants. We only met a keeper at the rhinos. We did not meet a keeper at the elephant barn. They were all out doing something. I don't know what. So after that, we walked back downstairs, piled back into our white, unmarked passenger van, and drove a little bit further to where you had what looked like a huge warehouse. And what it was the food prep area. It included a giant warehouse full of all sorts of bags of feed. I mean, it just looked like a huge pet store. It had all kinds of bird seed and feed and piles of hay and all this kind of stuff. Uh-huh. Everything you could imagine. Then you go into another door. There's all these refrigerators with all sorts of perishables. Then you go into the next room and you meet the people, literally half a dozen, maybe a little bit more, who prep all the food for all the animals in all of Walt Disney World. And what they do is they have a little computer that gives them a menu, so to speak, for each animal. And they go get a giant, or sometimes not so giant, depending on the animal, Tupperware. And they put together the meal for this animal for the day. They do an ungodly number of them every day. They have an amazing amount of resources for what they can pick from. If you think about the scope of the types of animals that are there. You get an idea of the difference in diet each one of these requires.
Right, sure.
Every one of these things is done point by point. So, for instance, you know, animal A gets 2 carrots, 4 pieces of celery, 5 ounces of oats, whatever it might be for this particular thing. They put them in a marked Tupperware, literally marked by a piece of masking tape that says elephant 4, you know, or something like that. And somebody comes, piles them into a truck, takes them off. These people work from the wee hours of the morning till about mid-afternoon, and this is all they do. They look like they're dressed up like lunch ladies, and they put together the meals for these animals. It is an incredibly fascinating place.
Lunch ladies, huh?
That's what they – well, that's what they look like. I mean, they're just preparing food. I mean, they could be making a salad, but what they're doing is just putting these things down, and it's – and they – and you talk to each one of them. So she – the there's usually one that comes over and kind of talk, you know,
right,
goes through each one. This one over here is doing this, and this is how we do it, and over there you find, you know, the perishables, and back there is where you find the grasses and the yada, 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 all this kind of stuff. And then they're asking questions of the people actually prepping it. There's usually one guy – there's other – well, there's – for us, there was one guy who was a ham who kind of enjoyed this, who if he had a fish would turn around and talk for the fish, you know, make the fish talk to you and things like that. It was really an amazing place. You think about the amount of animals in there, you would think this would be a giant operation, but it really isn't. It's one It's one room.
Now, you said it was that they feed all the animals in all of Walt Disney World?
Yes.
So Animal Kingdom Lodge animals, the food comes from there.
Correct.
What about like some of the – what about Living Seas?
Correct.
Really? Interesting.
Yep. Interesting. All the facilities have been moved there. There are a few exceptions, and I'm going to try to remember these. I want to say the ranch takes care of their own.
Oh, like – okay. Like the horses over there at Full
Yeah. Whoops. Yeah. I don't think they put together hay and stuff for the horses over there. I think they do that on their own. Want to say there might be another one somewhere, maybe birds located in a hotel or something. I can't think of exactly.
I think they still have a couple of exhibits of parrots at Caribbean Beach.
Yeah, something like that. They might not. They may do that on their own over there as well. But on any of the theme park ones and the Animal Kingdom Lodge, they're all made there.
Okay.
By the same 6 or 7 guys. Then when you, I'm sorry.
Who play with fish.
Right. He was actually very funny. Then when you're done there, you walk out and you go through doors. I thought this was fascinating as well. All the doors leading into this place, Mike, have – you know sometimes when you go into a restaurant, you'll have like a blower over the top of the door?
Okay, sure.
Okay. This one has a blower blowing down over the top of the door that would nearly – throw you into the ground if you weren't ready for it. And right. It's because of the flies.
Yeah, you want to keep them out.
You want to keep them out of the thing. So we noticed that going in. As we're walking out, somebody asked, why is this so heavy in this? Well, you're in the bug capital of America, and we got to keep them out of the lunch. I said, oh, that's a great point. So after we're done there, you walk outside. There's some more food, kind of stuff that can be stacked outside there, and then you walk over across the parking lot. This is all kind of one complex to where there's an office building. And all you really do in there is you get a little break. Now, in other tours I've been on, and Mike could speak to this, there are snacks that are actually kind of good. Some, you know, I've been on a few other tours. This is the only one where, let me just say this, the snack is worthless.
Oh, really? What is it?
It's nothing. It's like some granola bars and a bottle of water.
Okay.
And then they give you or at least for me, they used to give you pins. When we were there, you got a thermos, like a thermal cup, a coffee mug, which dribbles all over you.
Oh.
Yeah, they're not very well made.
Yeah.
But they're very cool. So I didn't throw them away. I like them. And they say, you know, they have the Animal Kingdom sign on it. It says Backstage Safari. They are unique to that tour.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and then you just sit there for a few minutes. There's water. They'll give you water bottles. You fill them up. And you take them with you. Remember, this is only like a 3-hour tour, so this is all done pretty quickly. You kind of see they inside these things. There's always, you know, Disney is big on this. There's always sort of corporate communication stuff everywhere. So you see, pictures of projects on the walls and stuff. And instead of seeing things like, pictures of Mickey Mouse or something like that, what you actually see is a lot of times they'll put up billboards on projects that the Wildlife Conservation Fund or the people who work there, the animal care specialists who work there, are in the field doing something in particular, like, you know, going to research cotton top tamarins or the sea turtles that they go and help out and things like that. So you'll all throughout these buildings, you'll have stuff like that on the walls. And you really kind of got to ask, can I stop and just take a look at this? We'll point a few of them out to you, but they're everywhere. And it's kind of a really neat thing, kind of neat to realize. And a lot of stuff you wouldn't know. It's like, you know, this doctor last year went away for 3 months to go and help sick, you know, orphaned gorillas in Africa or something like that. And there's a lot of pictures like that all over the place. So while you're walking through that, I would suggest you kind of pay attention. When your break is over, you get back into your truck and you drive over to Rafiki's Planet Watch, which is not very far.
Oh, you're right there, yeah.
Yeah, you don't even know you're in Rafiki's Planet Watch when you go in. You can't tell. It just looks like a building with a parking lot. And when you walk in, they tell you this is actually the back end of Rafiki's Planet Watch. And if you look to your left as you're walking down the hallway, you can actually see that these research facilities have windows looking out onto Rafiki's Planet Watch. But from the angle that you're at, you would never know it unless you actually peeked your head through it. And this is where a lot of that, like I was saying, the sort of information about the animals and the work that they do with animals is everywhere in here. And while we were there, actually, Rafiki came walking down the hallway as well. And we all had to kind of get out of the way because it's a little tiny hallway. And Rafiki is not a little tiny creature. So we're all kind of like piled up against the wall as he walks by.
Well, it's his Planet Watch, though.
It is his Planet Watch. While we were there, they actually brought us into the operating facility where they were bringing in a turtle who was new. I think he was from Asia, Mike. I can't remember exactly. I want to say it was somewhere. I want to say it was on Maharaja somewhere. I can't remember exactly where it was, but it was not a Galapagos tortoise that I remember. It was a turtle of some kind being brought in to be treated for pneumonia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they were very sort of, you know, you can't go in there. We're going to be bringing this turtle in. And while we were there, we actually saw the whole operation of how they brought him in, took him out, put him down on the thing. And you saw him kind of backstage being prepped to be brought into the actual veterinary facility. And while we walked in, they had just taken a bird that they were doing, like, checking its feathers and just doing sort of a once-over. But, well, they happened to be doing this with, I think they said they were going to anesthetize this turtle.
Right. So this is the operating room that you see on stage.
This is the operating room you see on stage. However, we are backstage in an area that you can't see on stage, but that we can see you.
Sure. Okay, sure.
And that we can see that facility, that operating room.
Okay.
So after you're done walking through there, and that's a fascinating few minutes there, you get back in your van and you drive to Harambe. And cool thing here was that we parked right next to the brand new Festival of the Lion King Theater being built. So, and basically the joke was, don't look that way as we're walking by. Don't look that way. But you really couldn't see anything anyway because there's pretty large construction walls all over the place because they were doing welding and things like that. So, and people, you know, we were parking their vans, parking their cars, right up against this wall. So you park there and then you go back on stage. And the whole backstage safari ends by getting a exclusive tour of the Kilimanjaro Safari on the safari truck. Basically, you do the safari, but you do it without the spiel, with only your group in the truck and your guide who's done all the backstage stuff, you know, who's taking you through the whole tour is the person talking to you.
Okay.
So how it works is, instead of doing the normal tour, she's kind of pointing out things like, there's the door there, this is how this animal gets in, remember we were backstage over here, and this is this animal, and that kind of stuff. And then she kind of goes through some sort of stories. She was talking to us about, at that time we had the zebra issue going on. She was, you know, she was explaining all that stuff. She was, you know, there was a few other things like that she was discussing. You know, what's real and what isn't here and all that kind of stuff.
Did she point out, like, the elephant bridge?
Yes, she did.
They sort of do that on the Wild Africa trek as well.
It sounded like sort of a brief version of that. But she's dealing less with animals and more with sort of operations.
Okay.
So this is where they come in. The bridge, obviously, is a very important thing in that. She was talking about... the cooling rocks for Pride Rock, where you know, there's one rock that they heat and cool, lion will lie on it depending on the temperature, and all that kind of stuff. And talking a little bit about, she mentioned a few things about, you know, some animals that are new. This one we just got. This one's brand just born. And at the time we were there, that new Maasai giraffe Mosey was in her first week, and she did a lot of talking about that and about how we can't stop for her. We got to drive through. We can't, you know, because we don't know what she's going to do. She might get nervous and that kind of stuff. So it was pretty fascinating. And when you're done with the safari, they let you off and they say goodbye, and that's it. It's all over in 3 hours. But what I would say, and I'm kind of scrambling here a little bit to get to the prices and stuff like that, because I did mean to mark that down and I didn't. For anybody kind of considering it, I really would suggest it. And I don't do that often, because it is a significant expenditure. I would imagine it's probably somewhere, right, Mike, in the $70-something range.
I believe that's what it is, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's significantly cheaper than the Wild Africa trek.
It is cheaper than Wild Africa trek. It's cheaper than many other of those safaris. Yet at the same time, you know, like, for instance, I went on the Wild by Design tour, and you actually got, like, donuts and muffins and coffee and stuff. So you actually got a fairly decent snack sort of breakfast thing. You don't get that here. This is really – that was kind of a letdown, to be honest with you. But it's immensely fascinating. And if you do get a chance to get up close to an animal, it's a chance you won't get anywhere else.
Dave, I just looked it up. It's $72 per person, according to one website I found.
Okay, so $72 a person is a big price. I mean, that's almost like another day you're paying for.
Yeah.
And I would say that if you have never been to the Animal Kingdom before, and you're coming down for a trip, and you only have a few days, no. But I would say that about any tour. Mm-hmm. It may not be worth your money and your time, because you really should take the time to experience everything that the Animal Kingdom has to offer on stage. But if you are a veteran of the Animal Kingdom, if you are somebody who's been to Disney World a bunch of times and you're looking for something different and something new, and also if you've done the backstage tours at any of the other parks, which I've done as well, the backstage operations at Animal Kingdom are unlike anything you could ever imagine. The amount of life back there, in just people and animals and vehicles, and the amount it takes to make this stuff run. And then you have the operations of the park. We haven't even talked about that.
You're right.
You know, I mean, if you think about all the rides, all the gift shops, all that stuff is there too. Then you have to have this these other facilities that are bigger and harder to maintain. It really is fascinating, and it really will bring home to you the greatness of this park and what it does and what they can and what it offers. But I, you know, I'm a person who doesn't like to tell people to spend an extra $70-something.
Yeah.
So I'm hesitant, but it's a great experience. And if you've been to the park before, this is a great way to supplement your experience at the park. That's how I would put it. I don't know if I wanted to touch on anything else.
I have a couple of things.
Yeah, go ahead.
One is, there's no photography allowed, correct?
None backstage. No, none at all.
Okay, so that's important to point out.
Yes.
There's also a restriction, and this obviously didn't come into play for you, but in terms of children, while at the Wild Africa Trek, I think you had to be like 10 or older. I forget what it was.
Yeah.
Or no, 8 years or older. And the Backstage Safari Tour, you have to be 16 or older.
Correct.
So if you have young children or even children in middle school.
They have to be adults, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. You have to be adults to go in. So those are two important things to remember. Is there a lot of walking? Is there a lot of standing? Or you know, for people who have, like, for example, the Wild Africa Trek, there's a significant amount of walking through, you know, difficult terrain even at some points.
Well, yes and no.
For people who have issues like that, do you have to keep that in mind?
I would say a lot of standing, because all of the places that I talked about, the elephant exhibit, the rhinos, the place where they made the food, backstage at Rafiki's, all that stuff, all of those places, and none of those places are you sitting down.
Okay.
And you're only in the van for a few minutes just to take you to a few of these places, but you're not physically walking. You're just walking into a building and standing there and listening.
Do you know if they have the capability of, I'm assuming they do, for people who are wheelchair bound or things of that nature? Do you have any idea about that?
I don't know that they have that. I don't see why they wouldn't, because every one of the buildings that you go into are cast member working areas, and they are all ADA approved, I would think.
Even like the Rhino Barn? Or
the
even
only one that I could think of that would be an issue would be the Elephant Barn, because you're going upstairs.
Okay.
But okay. Was there an elevator there? I don't remember. Don't know.
Gotcha.
I can't recall that.
All right.
But I'm sure they could, you know, move that around. The van that we were in did not have a handicap accessibility. So it was just a regular multi-passenger, you know, 15 passenger van that you would use, you know, for anything. So do they have a special one in that instance? I would imagine they do. I don't know the answer to that.
I would imagine they do too, but yeah. And if they could pick what barns they're going to, then they could probably direct the tour to the appropriate places for people who are wheelchair bound or have some certain issues, I would imagine.
And I imagine they could pick the barn that they're going to also. So,
yeah.
Any other questions?
Don't think so. I think you covered everything that I was curious about. It sounds like so you would say it was worth it if you're somewhat of a Disney fan and are interested in that kind of stuff.
Here's what I would say. It is the next thing Safari Mike should do.
Okay.
Because you will love it. That's you personally. For right. people who listen to this podcast, who I would assume are Animal Kingdom lovers, you should absolutely do it.
Okay.
Because you will get an appreciation for it, and it's expensive. I'm not going to take $75 and say it's not expensive, but really that's a dinner for two. I am also somebody who is very kind of cavaliering about looking backstage, and I know a lot of people don't really like that. They don't want the sort of experience to be distracting, you know, to the rest of their time in the park. Am I making sense there? You know, they want to see what they're supposed to see, and they don't want to then spend the time looking at doors that lead out to barns and stuff like that.
I understand, especially for the Magic Kingdom. You know, the magic is made. But to me, the Animal Kingdom is sort of a different, pardon the pun, beast. You know, there's a whole, as you were describing, a whole world back there of trying to take care of animals. It makes it very different to me in terms of seeing the backstage than, you know,
right.
going into the utilidors or something like that.
And that's the other thing I wanted to mention. This is specifically, the word safari is what it means. This is specifically backstage for the animal exhibits. You're not going behind the scenes to see how dinosaurs run. You never even go into Dinoland. You know, the normal Disney stuff is not what you're here for. This is for the animals. Specifically. So if you are an animal person, I would absolutely suggest, if you go to the Animal Kingdom because you love animals, then yeah, you would like this because you'll be fascinated by it. But again, I want to stress, there's not a lot of animal contact here or even visuals. So you don't see much. But yeah, I would definitely suggest it. So, Connie, if you've been to the Animal Kingdom before and you love it, absolutely go do it. That would be my suggestion. But eat a breakfast before you go, because they ain't going to feed you. So I guess that's it for us today.
Okay.
We are coming up to the end here, and I'd like to thank you once again for listening to Radio Harambe. What do we want to plug here? Our website's jomboeveryone.com. We have everything you need to know about the animal kingdom on there. I would get to it soon because it is going to change in the coming months. So stay tuned for all that stuff. I'm not going to reveal too much, but we are working on quite a few different things. Mike is on Twitter.
I am indeed.
At JomboEveryone. He also has, what else do you have?
Pinterest. I just put a whole bunch of videos up on YouTube.
Yeah, you did.
I think we're up to like 50 something now and more to come. That's, you know, find me on Twitter. There you go.
JomboEveryone.com. You'll find the links to all that. Mike's Twitter handle, Facebook page, YouTube. Everything is there. We do ask you to subscribe to the show on iTunes if you haven't already. Rate us, leave us a review there. For some reason, the review process definitely helps to kind of spread the word and make us sort of easily searchable or something like that. I don't really know how that works technically, but that's what they tell me. You can also listen to us on Stitcher and Podbean. I would like to once again plug the Jombo Everyone store at Zazzle.com/JomboEveryone. You can find that link on the page as well at JomboEveryone.com as well. That is, we're selling some great designs there, and all the money that we make is going to be donated to our conservation partners. Go to our conservation page to read all about that. I have two Radio Harambe extremely limited edition t-shirts left, both extra large. If you're interested in those, you can email me at safariguide@jomboeveryone.com. I guess that's it. For Safari Mike, I am Dave McBride. Kwa Harini, go well, and thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Now